What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 99. Today we're going to be doing an episode on running shoes. So specifically, what type of shoe is best for a certain sort of activity. So a minimalist shoe, something like a sock damn near, or a maximalist shoe, which is like a boot. So really, what's best for each. But first, we're going to do an article review. This week, we picked an article. What was the article called again, Tom?
It's called The Case Against Stretching.
The Case Against Stretching, yeah. So, pretty much, I pulled this article because I know a lot of people, especially in the gym community, think that stretching prior to working out is a good method to prevent injury. And this article pretty much went totally against that. So, what did you think of the article?
So, I agreed with, like, 90% of it, 95%. So it's not just the gym community, it's like the education community, like all organized sports. I mean, pretty much everybody stretches. You stretch before PE class, you stretch before like wrestling practice, basketball practice, whatever, football practice, they're out there stretching. So it's not just like the gym bros, it's like everybody does some sort of stretching beforehand. And yeah, like I agree with this article that it causes more harm than benefit.
Me too. And the article, it's not just, I don't know, I guess called like a fluff piece. Like there are references and it goes through and it just asks like, is there data supporting the notion that stretching, and we're talking about like static stretches. So where, you know, you have your arm across your chest, like to stretch your shoulders, or you grab your shin to kind of like stretch your quad, like those traditional static stretches everybody knows. So is there data supporting those stretches being like beneficial? And there really isn't. There's some mixed data showing there might be a benefit, but for the most part, there's no data showing that it's beneficial. And there is some data showing it could be like detrimental to performance, especially if you're in kind of like an explosive sport. It can show that it can kind of decrease that. And just from my perspective, I like the article and I agree with the article as well. I think, you know, the data isn't there showing that static stretching is beneficial. But I like that it said, if you are that type of person where you wake up and you have maybe extremely tight calves, and if you feel like stretching your calves makes you feel better, like, you know, then it says go ahead and stretch your calves. It's saying you don't have to not do that. But to prescribe stretching and promote like just that type of flexibility, like touching your toes, to promote flexibility in that notion as an aspect of health, as like a key pillar of health, shouldn't be a thing. Like, it just, there's no data supporting that as a good thing.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And one of the, like, the worst parts about stretching is, like, the way that we measure how flexible somebody is through the sit and reach. Like, everybody did that, like, in PE growing up, where it's pretty much you sitting on your butt and you reach out, try and touch your toes as far as you can. So when I was in college taking an exercise physiology class, we were learning about this topic and we tested it. We tested it against static stretchers versus like a warm-up. So if you just warm up on your own, you improve your flexibility almost the same amount as if you were to just sit there stretching. So like, honestly, it's way better just to warm up than to just sit there and stretch. But also, one of the girls in our class, she did horrible on the sit and reach. She's a gymnast. Like, right after she got like one of the worst scores in the class, she just like busted out and did the splits. So she's probably the most flexible person in the classroom, put on like the one measuring tool that like most people are going to use to see how flexible you are, she did horrible. So the one tool that we have is not even a good measurement.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, 100%. And that, yeah, you hear stuff like that where it's just the measure we use is just BS, and that's definitely not the only BS measure out there. And so what the article does recommend, and what I recommend as well to people about working out, is to just warm up prior to exercise. So if you can break a light sweat, going through the movements that you're going to go through that day. So if you're going to run, you know, maybe do some high knees. If you're going to work out your chest, do a light bench press prior to your actual working set. Break a little sweat, go through the motions with lighter weights or just your body weight. And that's how you should really warm up your muscles. That's way better than static stretching. So just a little tidbit, that's what you should do.
Yeah, I totally agree. And when you're doing that like really lightweight stuff, maybe push a little bit beyond the range of motion that you're going to be doing during your actual working sets. So if you are going to be doing some sprints, you should be doing a little bit of exaggerated like movements, you know, like butt kickers or like high knees. Like obviously you're not going to be sprinting in that range of motion, but that's a good idea. And if you are doing bench press, I like to really stretch out on like the bottom end to really make sure that bar is hitting my chest like hard and like getting a good stretch in my chest, something like that. And normally what I do, especially like if I'm going to do something like deadlifts, my first warm-up with the bar, then just throw on like a plate on each side, do another warm-up set with that, and then just keep adding on the weight until I finally get to a weight that's like a working set. That's how I warm up most of the time.
Yeah, and I think that's what I recommend to people. That's what you should do. So yeah, that's article of the week. If you want to read the whole article, it's really good. You can find it on the website, so tntwellnessandnutrition.com. It'll be linked to this post at the bottom, so it'll just be titled article of the week, so you can check that out. But
it's also on our Facebook page. I do want to talk about one thing that I did disagree with them
sure
about, is they said that tight muscles are better for you if you're a runner. And that is true in certain cases, but not true in other cases. And we're going to kind of get into that a little bit into this podcast. But if you're a sprinter, having tight muscles is a good thing. But if you're an endurance athlete, having tight muscles is not a good thing. So they're completely different things. And it just kind of lumped runners all into one like group, which there's a big difference between sprinting 100 meters and somebody running 100 miles. So, like, they should not be classified together.
Yeah, that's a good point. And somebody, like, you would know that. You would pick up on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a good transition to this week's podcast. So I'm definitely not going to be doing a lot of talking this week's podcast because we are talking about running, and we're going to be talking about the proper footwear for running. And anybody who listens to this, anybody who knows me knows I am not a runner. Definitely not my thing. The type of cardio I do, if I do cardio, is usually just on a stationary bike, or I might walk on an elliptical, walk on a treadmill. But running is not in my regimen at all. But Tom, that's Tom's thing. You know, he's definitely a long distance runner. I mean, shit, a short distance runner, he's done it all. So why don't we just kind of get into that?
All right, so the first thing we're going to look at is we're going to just look at what type of running shoes are best. Is it the minimalist ones, those are like the barefoot ones, or maximalist? Like the biggest brand I know for like maximalist shoes are like Hoka's, where it basically looks like they're going to make you like 2 feet tall, or not 2 feet, like 2 inches taller. The shoes look ridiculous, I'm not going to lie, but those are so popular in the running world.
What are they called?
Hoka is the name of the brand.
How do you spell that?
H-O-K-A.
Okay, Hoka, okay.
Yeah, and honestly, they look like... Honestly, like, if I wanted to make myself look taller, like I was going out on a first date and I didn't want to be, like, short, those are, like, the type of shoes I would want to wear.
Got it. Like, Skecher pumps or something like that.
Yeah, they look like that, but without the... Those the ones with, like, the curve on the bottom?
I don't know. I just know they make you, like, 2 inches taller.
Yeah, there's something like that.
Yeah.
All right. So, to answer the question, what shoes are better, we're going to look at two important aspects: injury prevention and running economy. But before we really get into that topic, I want to define some terms that I'm going to be throwing around a lot. So there's forefoot running, midfoot strike, and a heel strike. So a heel strike is when you're just like normally walking around. Heel strike is like you hit your heel first and then you push off with your toes. That's how most people walk. That's a pretty popular running pattern too. The next one is a midfoot strike, where you're not really landing on your heel, you're landing on like the middle of your foot and then pushing off with your toes. Your heels barely coming into contact with the ground. And then there's forefoot running, which is just you running on, like, the balls of your feet. Like, if you were trying to, like, run across something, like, really hot and you wanted, or you're, like, sneaking around like a ninja, something like that. So those are the three terms that I'm referring to.
So, like, pretty much running on your toes?
Yeah, just like, yeah, exactly. That was really, it's not very popular, but a lot of, like, the minimalist shoes kind of promote that type of running. And what's really not fair is that they look at 4-foot running, and then they compare that running technique to the minimalist shoes. So they're making, like, a false equivalency there. And we'll get into that in one of the studies that we're going to talk about.
Okay.
So the first topic is, let's talk about preventing injuries. So is there a difference when it comes to preventing injuries? Well, the answer to that, just like almost every other question that we talk about, is it depends. So according to a study from Nature.com, maximalist shoes increase leg stiffness and impact forces at higher speeds. These are two factors responsible for many injuries. So one explanation of why leg stiffness increases is due to running mechanics. So maximalist shoes, they have a lot more cushion. And with that cushion, it absorbs a lot of impact for the runner. So their leg doesn't have to bend as much, like every time their foot comes into contact with the ground, because all that extra padding is taking that contact for them. Whereas if you were wearing minimalist shoes, your leg would have to bend a lot more to deal with that impact force. So that extra movement in the leg causes mostly your hamstrings to just stay nice and loose because they're moving around a lot. But in these maximalist shoes, you're not really getting that bend, so your hamstrings become a lot tighter. And stiff muscles, they're beneficial for sprinters or high jumpers, something like that, if you're just doing a quick one-burst movement. But if you're running 30 miles plus, stiff muscles are a bad thing, because that repetitive motion over and over again is going to lead to strains or tearing of the muscle, not what you want to do. But maximalist shoes are designed to decrease impact forces. So it's kind of strange how they actually increase them. And what's strange there is that since they are more cushioned, the runners aren't really feeling the ground as much. So what they do is they overcompensate for that, and they land harder on the ground. And not only are they landing harder on the ground, they're pushing off the ground harder too. So think, like, if you're running in sand, you'd have to land harder and push off harder versus running on grass because of the softness of the terrain that you're running on. So it's the same thing with these big cushioned shoes. You're, like, overcompensating for that. And since you're not really feeling the ground as much, it's not a balancing act. You're actually overcompensating it and increasing the amount of force applied to your body instead of decreasing it. So these shoes are having a negative effect instead of a positive one.
Yeah, that's kind of counterintuitive, but it makes sense when you think about it like that.
Yeah, and one other thing that this article or this study didn't really look at, but this is something I noticed a lot, because I never really was into the maximalist shoes. I was used to be somewhere in, like, the middle ground, but now I'm definitely trending more and more towards the minimalist shoes. And having, like, those minimalist shoes, you can feel the ground a lot more. And if you're a trail runner like me, you're constantly running on uneven terrain. Like, you're stepping on rocks. Sometimes the rocks move and stuff like that. So if one thing, like, my biggest fear out there is I'm going to roll my ankle, sprain an ankle, break a bone in my lower body, something along those lines. And having the ability to feel that ground, like, right underneath me, that as soon as that rock moves, I feel it, I'm able to deal with it. I'm able to compensate for it. I'm either able to step off to the side and land, or my muscles can tighten up real quick. But with those, like, maximalist shoes, you don't feel that surface right away. So there's going to be a little bit delay in that reaction time. So that little bit of delay could be the difference between you rolling your ankle and you being able to catch yourself. So that's one thing they can't really look at. I don't know, honestly know if you really could study that, but that's one thing I really noticed when I switched from just, like, normal conventional shoes to minimalist shoes. And I honestly, that difference got to be even greater if you look at maximalist shoes, just about that. And that's my biggest fear out there, is rolling an ankle, because that's not a quick heal. Like, you're going to be out for weeks, if not months, maybe even longer, depending on how bad you get hurt. And if you're trail running by yourself out in the middle of nowhere and you break your ankle, what are you going to do? You're going to walk back or crawl back for, like, 20 miles back to your car? I mean, a lot of shit can go wrong with that situation.
Yeah, that's really bad. That's like a boxer breaking his hand. You know, like, for a runner, that's a huge injury. For someone like me, I could care less if I roll my ankle, because I can lift weights and I don't need to move my ankle at all, you know? But for you, that's a major injury.
Yeah, like, if you're not running, I mean, you could put a brace on your leg, your ankle, and you could probably still do some leg exercises, or you at least do upper body. But if you have a lower body injury, you can't do anything. And if you are dumb enough to try and do something, you're just going to make that injury even worse, put yourself out even longer.
Yeah.
So when it comes to injury prevention, maximalist shoes do not hold up. They're actually more likely to cause harm than benefit. One thing that we should mention is that when you're talking about like low speeds and like medium speeds, there's not much of a difference when it comes to impact forces. The maximalist shoes are slightly higher, but not extremely higher. But when it comes to like running, like the slow speeds we're talking about is like a slow walk or a slow jog. But if you're looking at like actual running speeds, these factors were very significant. It was much higher. I want to say it was about a 15% increase in impact forces when you're comparing those two shoes. It's pretty significant when you're talking about repetitive motion going over and over and over again.
Yeah, that is.
All right, so we talked about injury prevention. Now let's talk about running economy. So first I'm going to talk about a study from the Journal of Applied Physiology. It compared heel striking, which is like the conventional running form, to forefoot striking, which is like for minimalist shoes. You don't have to be a forefoot striker to be wearing minimalist shoes. I wear minimalist shoes. I'm not a forefoot striker. But forefoot striking is when you're running on the balls of your feet. So this was measuring oxygen consumption and carbohydrate oxidation.
Is that what running economy is? Because I've never even heard the term running economy.
So that's the thing. There's a lot of ways you can measure running economy. And this was the one I thought was the best one. Because if you're looking at how much oxygen you're using and how much carbohydrates you're using, that's a pretty good measurement for how intense this exercise actually is.
Yeah, for sure.
Some of the other ones are looking at how long your feet are in contact with the ground or how much you're airborne, like in between stride lengths and stuff like that. And I don't really see how that's really measuring your economy. That's just measuring your technique, but you're not really looking at the physiology of what's actually going inside your body. So that's why I like this study, is because it's actually using really good measuring tools.
Okay.
In this study, they measured runners at three different speeds, like a slow jog, a medium run, and a fast run, almost a sprint. And at all three speeds, heel striker runners use less oxygen. And at the slow speeds and medium speed, the heel strikers use less carbohydrates. At the fast speed, there was no difference in carbohydrate oxidation. It's probably because they were at a sprint. They were going as hard as they can, so it didn't really matter. And I'm willing to bet these runners probably weren't fat adapted either.
For sure. No, no way.
Yeah. So does this study show that conventional shoes are better for running than minimalist shoes? Not exactly. Because like I mentioned earlier, many runners aren't 4 foot strikers. I'm not. And even when I run barefoot, which I do pretty really often, every time I take my dogs to the park, I sprint around the park with them, like having them chase me, I chase them, getting some HIIT training in. I do that barefoot, and even then I'm a midfoot striker. So this study is really looking at foot striking pattern more than shoe wear. But I wanted to include this study because this study gets cited really often as a knock against minimalist shoes, even though that's not what they were measuring. They were measuring running technique and not shoe wear. So I think it's a little unfair, even though I do like what they were measuring. So I wanted to include another study. This is a meta-analysis, which is looking at 53 related studies, which was looking at foot striking pattern and its effect on injuries and running economy, pretty much the topic of today. And this study found that there was no significant difference in running economy. But it did note that when 4 foot runners, those are the ones like for minimalist shoes, switch to a heel strike, their running economy did decrease significantly. So what that goes to show you is these natural 4 foot runners, if you make them switch to the supposed better running pattern, their economy decreases. So I don't think there's really one pattern that is better than another one, but pretty much just stick what you're good at. And you don't need to have a certain running pattern to wear certain shoes. Your body can kind of adapt to it as well.
But like, is a decrease in economy a good thing?
No, you want running economy to be good. I mean, high.
So more oxygen, more carbohydrates?
I get what you're saying. I'm trying to think of the way to import this right.
Sure.
The better your running economy, the higher your running economy, that means that you're using less oxygen, using less carbohydrates.
So you want a low running economy.
You want a higher running economy.
A high running economy. Okay.
Yeah. The higher running economy means you're using less oxygen and less carbohydrates.
Okay. Got it.
It's kind of confusing.
Yeah, I've never even heard. This is the first time I've heard running economy in my life.
Well, just think of like any other economy. You want a good economy.
Makes sense.
You don't want a bad economy.
Yeah, you want more money, not less.
Yeah. So same thing. I know even though we're talking about carbohydrates and oxygen, the lower consumption of oxygen and lower consumption or lower utilization of carbohydrates means a higher running economy.
Okay, got it. I'm glad you clarified that.
Hey, I'm glad you asked that question because I'm sure everybody else listening probably had that same question.
Yeah.
That same question. I should have went over that earlier. So the study also was looking at injury prevention, and there wasn't enough evidence to determine if there's a reduced risk of injury prevention from wearing these different types of shoes or these different running patterns. But I did mention earlier about the impact loading and that increased leg stiffness, and that study did agree with those facts. But you can't, it's really hard to study injuries. Like, what are you going to do? Are you going to put these runners out there and make them get injured? I mean, that's not really an ethical study. You can't have them running on, like, all these, like, really weird terrains trying to have them roll their ankles. Like, nobody's going to sign up for that study. You couldn't pay me enough to go out there and try and roll my ankle, sprain my ankle, break a bone in my leg. You know what I mean? Like, so there's, it's not really an easy way to determine that. And injuries are caused by so many things that if you do an epidemiological study on that, you're going to get all sorts of correlational studies, correlational evidence that's really hard to apply. So the injury prevention one is more theoretical than fact-based, and it's mostly just to do with it's really hard to formulate a study to study that injury prevention. But higher impact loading is definitely a sign that you're more likely to get injured, and that increased leg stiffness is also a sign that you're more likely to get injured, and these repetitive motion type of exercises. So honestly, I still think minimalist shoes are the way to go. One thing I've noticed is that my running pattern has changed as I've switched to minimalist shoes, and that's a good thing. I feel like I'm much better at it. My form has changed to adapt with the shoes, and that's to one thing I'm willing to bet is that it's decreasing the impact loading. Because beforehand, when I first started to get into it, I know I was a heel striker. And those are the people that have that really hard, really high impact loading, which is not a good thing. Those minimalist shoes, what they do is they force you to land on the ground softly because you can feel it in your feet. If you feel it in your feet, you're eventually going to feel it in your knees, your hips, and up your back, and so on. Those Hoka shoes, they probably prevent those injuries in your feet, but are your knees going to feel it? Hell yeah, they are. Your hips are going to feel it. Your back's going to feel it. So you're pretty much just saving your feet instead of the rest of your body.
Do you feel like your feet are stronger?
Oh, for sure.
Okay. Is that the whole other area they probably don't consider?
So there, I did look at a study. I didn't include that. That said that there was no change in there. So they had runners switch to a minimalist shoe to see if like their feet really get stronger. And they didn't really measure strength. They measured if there was a difference in the size of your arc. And it was only a 10-week study, and they noted that there was no significant difference. But when you're talking about something like changing the arc of your foot, changing like pretty much bone structure and everything, I think it's going to take a little bit longer than 10 weeks to notice a significant change.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, but I didn't even know that arch of the feet is like correlated to strength of the feet. Is that, that's true? So a flat foot is a weak foot?
So when your feet get stronger or the muscle of your feet gets stronger, they're going to cause your arch to get higher.
Okay.
But, I mean, there's also, like, your arch can be too high, too. Like, that could be a negative, too. Like, there's that Goldilocks zone where everything is in your body. But, yeah, if you have flat feet, that's most likely due to you having very weak feet.
Okay.
But, again, people, there's 7 billion people on this planet. There's a lot of different types of bodies out there. Everybody's anatomy is a little bit different. So there are going to be some flat-footed people out there that still have really strong feet.
Okay, sure.
So if you are going to make the change to minimalist shoes, I suggest doing it gradually. I know a lot of people that went from like Hokas to like the, they're called Vibrams, which are like the five finger, like the toe shoes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, have you seen those?
Like, yeah, I've seen those. I've thought about getting a pair, actually.
Yeah, I have ones that are just a little bit thicker than that. They're not quite that minimalist, only because of the terrain I'm running. Because, like, I land on a lot of sharp rocks and stuff, and I can feel the rocks, but I don't feel the pain. I felt like if I was wearing those little, like, gloves on my feet, I'm pretty sure I'd feel a lot of those rocks, and that would hurt like hell.
Yeah, then you wouldn't even be able to run. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, the best way is, if you're going to make this switch, is to do it gradually. Start walking in the shoes first, then start doing some easy short runs and gradually increase the distance and intensity over time. This should be done over, like, months. Don't expect to make the change in a matter of days or even a couple weeks. Like I mentioned earlier, there was a study that looked at 10 weeks, and 10 weeks wasn't enough time for there to be a change in the arc of the foot. And honestly, I think that's just because it's a short study. I think if they looked at that study over a six-month time, there probably would be some change. So there are a lot of ways you can work on like, your feet strength. Some of the things that I do are like balancing activities. Like I do yoga a few times a week. I just got a paddle board, so I've been doing a lot of paddle boarding out there too. And since I've been training at home, all the weight training I do barefoot, especially when I'm working out my legs. I'm doing like pistol squats barefoot, deadlifts barefoot, all that type of thing, just so I make sure that my feet get nice and strong. And then when I do have the opportunities to, I'm also running outside barefoot, just to make sure like my feet are getting as strong as they possibly can.
Yeah, so I've I kind of go back and forth on this. Like, I always say, okay, now I'm going to train barefoot, and then I just don't, because it's like a habit for me to put on shoes. And then if I already have my shoes on when I start lifting weights, like, I'm committed, you know? Like, I'm not going to go and take them off.
Yeah.
But the past maybe 2 weeks, I have been training barefoot. I don't really notice a difference, but I understand that over time it will increase the strength of my feet, and that's something I want to happen.
Well, one of the biggest things I've noticed is my balance has gotten so much better. So I don't know if that's my feet are physically stronger, or if it's just that the muscles in my feet are having a quicker response time to adjust to my balancing.
Yeah, like those pathways are enhanced. Yeah, who knows? But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably a little bit of both, to be honest. But yeah, like, my balance is so much better. As funny as, like, I think I've been paddleboarding one time in my life before I got these paddleboards. And the first time I went out there, I got on it, no problem. Went out there with my dogs. My dogs are moving all the time, back and forth. Sometimes I'll have two dogs on there moving around, jumping in the water and stuff like that. Like, it's not the easiest thing in the world to do. And I don't think I've fallen yet.
That's good.
Like,
yeah.
I'm not a pro at it. I just got pretty good balance from working on all these other things.
Yeah, okay.
If you are going to be able to put in the work, you should switch to minimalist shoes. I think it's definitely the way to go. But, hey, I get it. There's only so much time in the world. If you're not going to put in that work to switch to those shoes, you're not going to put in that time to work out barefoot, to do things like yoga and, like, work on your balance and work on all those things to strengthen your feet, then you probably should switch or stick with like a conventional shoe. I don't think anybody should be running in those like Hokas, those big ass like 2-inch thick sole shoes. I don't think anybody should be running in those, but a lot of people do anyway. So yeah, like I suggest putting in the work. Your feet will definitely get better because of that. When I first started running, a couple of my longer runs, the bottom of my feet did hurt. But I've only had that problem, I think, twice. And ever since then, like, that hasn't gone away, or that's gone away, I haven't felt it again. A lot of the running injuries I feel repeatedly, that's one that's just gone away. So I attribute all of that to just strengthening my feet. And I think everybody that's out there running, honestly, even if you're not running, your feet are going to be with you for your entire life, or hopefully they will be. So you should be trying to take care of them. Honestly, like, I think you shouldn't have any weaknesses in your body. Whatever your weakness is, that's something you should be trying to make a strength.
For sure. Yeah, and strength is never a weakness. Yeah, so, and our feet get neglected, you know, that's just something people don't think about. You know, from my perspective, you want to work out your biceps, you want to work out your chest, it feels good, it looks good, but no one ever thinks about working out your feet. So, if you're a runner, your feet are extremely important, so take care of them, and obviously, this podcast recommends a more of a minimalist shoe. For if you're lifting weights, I recommend barefoot. If you can train at home, if not, use like whatever those like minimal shoes at the gym. That'll help as well. But yeah, that's a lot of good info. I'll never use any of it because I never plan to run. But it's if you're a runner out there, listen up, take notes, you know?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's not even just for runners. Like basketball players, a lot of basketball players have horrific feet. And some of their playing careers get cut short just because they have too many foot issues. And I think a lot of that has to do with, like, basketball shoes are really thick-soled. So they have so much padding and stuff and so much support that they're never really making their feet get, like, nice and strong to hold up to all the wear and tear that they're putting on their bodies. So I think Kevin Durant has some foot issues right now. I mean, honestly, almost every NBA player has the nastiest looking feet imaginable. Just think about how much time they're running, jumping, landing on them. And I highly doubt that they're ever walking around barefoot or doing anything like the activities I was just mentioning to strengthen their feet. You hear it all the time, like they'll have some stress fractures in their feet, stuff like that. And yeah, I mean, like turf toe is like another one for like football players. There's a lot of other sports that could benefit a lot from just strengthening your feet. Having strong muscles is like the best way to prevent injuries.
Well, there you go. Well, that's a podcast on shoes and running. Did you have anything else to say, or think that was pretty good?
I think that was about it. I mean, I did enough to convince you to switch over to minimalist shoes, or at least stay away from those like maximalist, like moon boot type shoes out there.
Yeah, no, I think so. And I think honestly, I mean, maybe just from my perspective and what I know, that's like common sense. Like, why would you want to wrap up your feet and then beat them up? Because you're obviously just avoiding that damage, and you're just avoiding a problem and creating it somewhere else. Like you said, like your knees or your hips or your back. So it doesn't make sense. But I guess people just don't think that way.
Yeah, I mean, we normally try to throw in that evolutionary argument. I mean, for the most part of evolution, like, we were either walking around barefoot, and eventually I'm sure somebody figured out that, oh, hey, we're walking around this desert, sipping on these rocks and these thorns is pretty uncomfortable. Let's throw some leather on the bottom of our feet. So I don't think there was ever any point in history up until fairly recently that we actually did have like a lot of support on our feet. Like our feet were designed to walk around either barefoot or with like minimal support. So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense that now all of a sudden we need as much support as humanly possible. I mean, come on now.
Yeah, doesn't make sense at all. Well, all right, that's another podcast in the books. Thank you for listening. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, if you haven't already done so, please rate and subscribe on your favorite podcast provider. If you have already done so, thank you. Tell your friends to make sure that they rate and subscribe. You can find us pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. I hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.